Welcome in, podcast listeners, Braves fans. I feel it. I never would have thought that I would end up a Braves fan, but I have. I am. I was rooting for my 10-year-old and all the family here who are Braves fans, and that was a tough one. The Dodgers win 3 in a row to advance to the World Series. The Braves lose 3 in a row to go home. We'll talk about that, unfortunately, for Atlanta area fans. Plus, Alabama absolutely puts it on Georgia in the second half, a double hit for a lot of Atlanta area sports fans, and we will break down everything in the world of the NFL, including a remarkable comeback win by my Tennessee Titans to get to 5-0 and be one of three undefeated teams left in the NFL. How about Brady taking down Aaron Rodgers, and much more in the world of college football in the NFL. Joel Klatt joins us, as does Sean Merriman. Lots to get into. Appreciate all of you downloading the podcast, which begins right now.
Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com. Or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Well, it's rare on a Monday that we would mention anything other than the NFL or college football when it is football season. But it is also fair to say that that was an unbelievably epic seven-game series between the Braves and the Dodgers, with the Dodgers storming back to win three straight to close out the series and come back from a deficit in Game 7 as well. The Mookie Betts catch, the Bellinger home run to win it. Dodger fans have to be ecstatic. Brave fans have to be in the dumps over the way that this went down. Now, I think if you had told Braves fans before the season started that you would win two postseason series and have an opportunity to be in a Game 7 in the NLCS with a chance to go to the World Series, given the fact that it had been so long since the Braves won a postseason series, they would have taken it. But when you go up 3-1 in a series like the Braves did, and then you have three straight opportunities to close out the series and you can't manage to do it, that is going to linger and sting for a very long time, especially for Atlanta area sports fans. Now, last night, as soon as the game ended, I put up a question, and I'm sorry, Atlanta area sports fans. What's worse, the Falcons blowing a 28-3 Super Bowl lead or the Braves blowing a 3-1 NLCS lead? I'm sorry to have to bring it back up. The vast majority of people said 28-3 in the Super Bowl. But, you know, a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl is one game. And you're playing against the greatest dynasty ever in Brady, Belichick, and the Patriots. So I understand the majority of you saying 28-3, but when you're up 3-1, you get three opportunities to close the door here. And not only were you up 3-1, and I hate to have to relive this with Braves fans, but you're up 3-1 in the series, and you're up 2-0 in Game 5, and you've got what you think might be a sacrifice fly to right field. Mookie Betts came in and made an incredible catch. And you can argue that's when everything changed. And this was before the other two incredible catches that Mookie Betts made. What were the Red Sox thinking, by the way, in dealing Mookie Betts? But he makes that shoestring catch, and then he just absolutely guns it home. But Ozuna left early, and they actually took that run off the board for the Braves. So the Braves would have been up 3-0 in the fifth game with a 3-1 series lead. Instead, they double up Ozuna to end the inning, and they had a runner on second. Now, there were so many incredible plays in Game 7, But I think if you're a Braves fan, the one that you're sitting back around on and like, how in the world did this happen, was when you lost, you had runners at second and third, nobody out. Markakis hits a ground ball to short. And by the way, Nick Markakis, I feel like every time he came up to bat, the bases were loaded or there were runners in scoring position, and he did nothing for the entire NLCS. I think Nick Markakis left 743 runners on base in the NLCS. He even had to shave his beard, I think, to try to change his mojo. But he hits a ground ball to short, and they catch the runner coming home, and then the runner gets in a rundown, and Austin Riley manages to somehow get doubled off trying to advance to third as well. And that felt like a huge play. Freddie Freeman has a home run taken away by Mookie Betts in what I believe will be an incredibly iconic play. And then Cody Bellinger hits a huge home run in the postseason to win effectively Game 7. And then it looked like he hurt his shoulder, or at least he was exaggerating like he hurt his shoulder in his celebration. If you had shoulder issues, maybe I wouldn't go with a shoulder-involved celebration. Just an idea from me. But one of the cockiest bat flips you will ever see on that crushed home run. And the Dodgers are now a pretty massive favorite to win the World Series over the Rays, their first World Series since 88. The Braves haven't been to the World Series since the 90s. I don't know what you think if you are the Braves and a Braves fan and you're waking up this morning. I will say this. My son, my 10-year-old huge Braves fan, I told him he could stay up and watch Game 7, and he fell asleep with the game on. So he doesn't know yet how the game ended. When he fell asleep, it was tied. Actually, sorry, the Braves were up 3-2, and he fell asleep. So I actually don't. I actually feel sorry for him having to wake up. It was a late night for a lot of people out there. And I actually feel sorry for when he wakes up, he's going to have to find out that the Braves actually lost their lead in Game 7 and aren't going to get to go to the World Series. Maybe you can say that's what you have to deal with to be a Braves fan. Oh, man, just what a gut punch. Danny G, by the way, is on vacation, so the Dodger fans can't even exult. Just an absolute gut punch if you are a Braves fan. And I actually think, I understand 28-3 is kind of legendary because it's the Super Bowl, but I feel like giving up a 3-1 lead to go back to the World Series for the first time in a generation, basically 25 years or whatever the heck it is, 22 years, that's a pretty big deal too. So I know the Braves are young, and I know they have a lot of good young talent, but the Dodgers are really good, probably looking good for a long time. And by the way, how about Clayton Kershaw? He gets to go to the World Series now. I don't even remember seeing him on television basically after he lost Game 4 and it seemed like the Dodgers were done for. I haven't even seen him out there on television anywhere for the past several games, and now he gets a chance at redemption in the World Series. And he might well, I would think, depending on how things will set, I would think he'll probably be the Game 1 pitcher, wouldn't he? Wouldn't the expectation be, now they're playing on Tuesday night, so I would think there's probably a good chance that on the rotation, he would be right back up and would be the Game 1 starter. So he will get an opportunity at redemption pretty quickly if the Dodgers could go on and win this World Series when it seemed highly unlikely after he lost Game 4 and the Braves took a commanding 3-1 lead in this series. All right, we got a lot to get into. So that's my take on Game 7 of the NLCS with the Braves managing to lose a 3-1 series lead and with the Dodgers managing to come back, however you want to look at that. The Dodgers found a way to get the win in Game 7. We got a ton of storylines here. Just so you know, Joel Klatt is going to join us in the second hour of the program. Coming up here in a little bit, we're going to be joined by Sean Merriman in the first hour. He's one of our NFL insiders. We'll be breaking down all the NFL with him. But the other big news, I would say in general, coming out of what was a big football weekend, how about Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers absolutely dominating against the Packers and Aaron Rodgers in an epic beatdown that had Aaron Rodgers looking downright human, throwing two interceptions, completing less than half of his passes. They couldn't run the ball. The Bucs defense came to play. Brady, I told you, this is one of my favorite bets that I've seen in a very long time. Brady only needed to throw for 166. He didn't need to do a lot because the defense took complete control, but Gronk showed up and was the leading receiver, and so we had a Gronk-Brady reunion. Huge win for the Bucs, puts them into first place in the NFC South, and puts them still in the running in a big way to make the NFL playoffs. That was an incredible game to watch, to see Brady bounce back. I actually was in the stands for an unbelievable game. That is, if you're a Titans fan, the Titans came surging back and found a way to get the win over the Texans and did something that has never occurred in the history of the NFL, and that is for a team to have a 350-plus yard passer. Ryan Tannehill went for 364, and a 200-plus yard rusher. Derrick Henry went for 212 in the same game. All of that, absolutely incredible. The Titans went for 601 yards of total offense, which is the most yardage for that team in the history of the franchise. By the way, the Bucs also, in addition to the way that they won 38-10, and we're going to be breaking down a lot of these games, zero penalties, zero turnovers, zero sacks. That, my friends, is a pretty good sign that things might be going well. As if that were not enough for Brady to be excited about how the Bucs won, the Patriots are at below 500 through five games for the first time since 2001, when Brady led the team to its first of six Super Bowl titles. And New England snapped a streak of 18 consecutive seasons above 500 through five games, which was the longest streak in NFL history. And Cam Newton looked very pedestrian. Why, you might be thinking, does that matter in the grand scheme of things? Well, certainly with the Bills playing tonight against the Chiefs, the Bills have to feel pretty good. Sorry, Bills Mafia, don't want to get you too excited about the opportunity to win this division. But also, Cam Newton just looking okay. You can't lose in that scenario against the Broncos and feel like you should be favored to be a playoff team. So a pretty huge win for the Denver Broncos, but a really, really bad loss for the New England Patriots. And then also, how about when you look at the landscape of the NFL games that took place yesterday, how about the Steelers? Just coming out, getting to 5-0, delivering a beatdown for the Browns. The Browns never had hope at all that they were ever going to win that football game. Just an utter, unmitigated beatdown from the Steelers of the Browns. And as a result, we have got an incredible game scheduled for Sunday here in Nashville, where I live. The Steelers going on the road against the Titans, 2-5-0 teams. Guys, there's only three undefeated teams left in all of football right now. The Steelers and the Titans. One of those teams will be 6-0. Everybody else will have lost. One AFC unbeaten will still remain after that next game. And the only other unbeaten team at this point are the Seahawks. And the Seahawks are set up for, you know, they had their bye this week, and they are set up now to go on the road against the Cardinals, and then they get the 49ers, and then they get the Bills and the Rams. So, I mean, we got four pretty tough games coming up for them right there as well. So, a lot to get into with the NFL. We will discuss all of these games and more with Sean Merriman next. And then at the bottom of the hour, I will talk with you a little bit more about what an incredible scene it was for the Titans to win in front of, again, a drastically reduced crowd. And we'll also talk about the big win for Alabama and the dominating performance from Clemson. Are we convinced that both of those teams are headed to the playoff? All that's still to come. But in the meantime, Dodger fans probably still drunk. Maybe some of you not even gone to bed yet. Still celebrating a Game 7 win. I'm sorry, Braves fans. Again, I don't even want my son to wake up because I don't want to have to tell him that the Braves lost. When he fell asleep, they were up 3-2. And it's going to be a tough one to wake up for him and a lot of other young kids who are Atlanta Braves fans and might have fallen asleep before that game was over. When we come back, more on the NFL with Sean Merriman. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
We are joined now by Mr. Lights Out himself, Sean Merriman, as we work through everything that took place over the weekend in the NFL. And Sean, I want to start with what was probably the biggest game, at least the one that I paid the most attention to, the Bucs hosting the Packers, and Tampa Bay just absolutely dominated. Was it more Tampa Bay doing everything right? Was it the Packers doing everything wrong? What do you make of what you saw in the battle between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady?
Yeah, well, it's no doubt about it. The Bucs are playing well right now. Their defense, man, I mean, it's incredible. They're the most stingiest defense in the NFL. They know how to turn the ball over and give their offense more opportunities. You know, that's where they won the game. And the second part of it is, you know, Aaron Rodgers did some uncharacteristic things. I mean, you know, he's not one to throw those types of interceptions and make some of the decisions he made. So, you know, let's not expect to see that again for the next four or five weeks. But it was definitely the Bucs defense, man. They're rocking and rolling over there.
All right, so a bunch of other games going on, and so you liked what you saw out of the Bucs. What about the Patriots? What in the world is going on with this team? I mean, it's kind of crazy to expect such excellence over time, but Cam was mediocre to bad. I don't think anybody anticipated that they were going to lose this game against the Broncos. What did you see of this one?
Well, you know, for one, let's not forget that, you know, Cam is coming into a new system. I mean, you know, they're only a few weeks in. No offseason, still trying to get things going, man. So I don't look too far into it, because as soon as you count the Patriots out, next thing you know, they're in a conference championship game. They have the championship game. So you can't count those guys out. Bill Belichick is still there. Now, what I do see, though, is, you know, some of the problems that they've had in the past, they don't have the same type of team to overcome now. You know, when they had the bad starters from rocky situations, they've always been able to battle their way out of it. They don't have that same team to do it anymore, so that should be a little bit of concern if you're a Patriots fan.
We're talking to Sean Merriman. Listen to the Lights Out podcast. It's part of the iHeart Podcast Network. Encourage you to check it out as he goes into the NFL and more. Sean Merriman there, the Lights Out podcast. All right, the Steelers were absolutely dominant over the Browns. Are the Steelers the best team in the AFC? They're undefeated. I'm going to get to the Titans in a minute. But the Steelers, absolutely dominant. We got two 5-0 teams that are set to play. The Browns had won 4 in a row. Everybody wanted to buy into the fact that maybe the Browns are going to be good. What did you see in this one?
For one, you know, I'm hoping for a speedy recovery for Devin Bush, man. That was you know, it sucks, you know, being a guy like myself was injured and couldn't come back from it. When I see guys of that talent get injured, you know, I always feel bad for them. But two, the Steelers, man, they're the hottest, in my opinion, they're the hottest team in the NFL right now. They're so dominant at so many different levels. They can get after you up front. You know, Big Ben is playing. They're running the ball, man. This is what the Steelers been, you know, in the past where it was super successful. They were able to run the ball and do the ground to pound. It opens up so many other things for those guys. So right now, I would say they're probably the most dangerous team in the NFL.
The Steelers, as you look forward and think about what you're seeing out of Ben Roethlisberger, does he look back to being 100% healthy to you? Or, I mean, he only threw for 160 yards. I know they had the ball kind of rolling on the ground, and they got up so early with the turnovers and everything else. They didn't really need to take aggressive action. But what percentage would you say Ben Roethlisberger is to what you have grown accustomed to seeing from him?
Well, you know, they're winning games right now, and I think that's what's most important. So if Big Ben has to go out and throw 160 yards and they win like they did and come out on top, then let's keep rolling like that. I mean, look, Big Ben is up there in age. You know, he's been around for a long time, so he's not going to be the same. Everyone's going to decline at some point. But right now, the way they're clicking at all cylinders, you don't need him to go out and throw for 300-plus. You know, stick to what formula is working for you. It's obviously been working for them this year. So, you know, when he has to go out and make those big plays and those clutch, possessions, he'll do that.
It was the most entertaining game, I think, of the entire day. I was there in person watching the Texans play against the Titans. Texans now fall to 1-5. I mean, the season is effectively over. But Derrick Henry goes for over 200 yards. The Titans put up over 600 yards of offense. I think they certainly have issues on the defensive side of the ball. But what did you see in the Titans-Texans game, and are you a believer in the Titans at this point?
I am. And that guy, Derrick Henry, in the back, he makes anybody a believer. When you got a force of that nature and a guy who can take the ball 90-plus yards, and he's 240-plus pounds and that big, and it just opens up so much on your offense. You'll start seeing Brown catch balls and guys who, you know, are not big playmakers catching balls because they're paying so much attention to Derrick Henry in the backfield. So they've had a great season, but they're still the sleeper that hasn't gotten the full respect of how good they are. Mike Vrabel will have these guys believing they're underdogs still. You know, it's the same thing of when he was a player, and I remember playing against him for all those years when he was with the Patriots. Their attitude was they're the underdogs no matter what. So they're playing like underdogs right now, and they're going to be a sleeper when it comes time here to playoffs.
You played, obviously, on the defensive side of the ball and had to make your reads. The Titans win with Derrick Henry on 3rd and 5, putting him in the wildcat in overtime. He comes off the left tackle, scores. You're lined up on defense, and you see that scenario. What, in your mind, are the checks? I know they've run the play where Derrick Henry has passed it before, but when you are playing where you are, you're like, man, if Derrick Henry's going to throw the ball, I'll take that. You know, like, I mean, how do you read that play? Did the Texans do what they should have? I mean, obviously, Derrick Henry scored, but on the defensive side of the ball, in a situation like that, what are you thinking? Put us in that mindset.
Well, you know, for one, you never want to overlook, you know, him possibly throwing the ball. I mean, we had plays designed up for Ladainian Thomas, and he'd go and take and throw the ball all the time out the backfield. So that's not impossible. But you can live with those, like you just said. Look, Derrick Henry's a huge man, all right? So when he lines up in that wildcat, and he doesn't have that far to go. And him being patient as he was in that play, you know, it's hard to stop. You know, they only needed a couple yards, so it was hard to stop. And look, man, they're doing something special over there. They put together a formula to win. They're playing like a championship caliber team who playing, you know, great defense and running the ball. And that's just a recipe for success, and that's what's going to carry this team late in the season. Derrick Henry stays, if he stays healthy, because he's touching the ball a lot, they're going to be a problem for anybody down the road.
So, is that a little bit like an offensive coordinator feeling himself? You know, Arthur Smith, they got whatever it is, 597 yards or whatever, 596 if I'm doing the math right at that point in time. That's a pretty cocky play call, it seems to me. 3rd and 5, you got a quarterback who's been playing really well, and you take him out, put him out wide, and go ahead and say, hey, we're going to roll with Henry here. Is that just where you feel like almost everything you've got rolling with the offense is going to work? I mean, because that's when I saw it, so I'm there watching it live, Sean, and I thought to myself, wow, you know, Ryan Tannehill's got 4 touchdown passes already, and he's traditionally been really good in red zone scenarios. So when I saw they were going direct snap to Derrick Henry, my first thought was, okay, they're going to make a decision to go for it on 4th down here and go for the win, and they think they're going to get 3 or 4 yards with Henry out of the wildcat. Maybe they score. But it's a pretty aggressive call, don't you think?
You know, my former coach, Marty Schottenheimer, once told me, and his philosophy was, it doesn't matter what you know what we're going to do, is can you stop it?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what I seen on that play. It wasn't no one in the building, I believe, that Derrick Henry was going to get the ball, and it wasn't going to be some, you know, magical play. He was getting the ball and basically saying, stop it. And that's what confidence level that this team is playing with right now, and that's why they're scary.
How hard is it to tackle somebody like Derrick Henry?
You know, when I first got into the NFL, my welcome to the NFL thing was tackling Jerome Bettis.
Yeah.
Right? And I, you know, for the first time I seen somebody that was that big. Now, he was big the other way around, but, you know, he was still, what, 260 or 270 pounds. And at that point, I was like, you know what, this is a different breed. The NFL, we haven't seen anything like Derrick Henry. Nothing. I don't, you know, there's been some big backs in the, in, back in the day and some guys, but in order to be that big and take the ball 90-plus yards the way he do, stiff-arming guys and doing the things that he's done this season, this, in the past seasons, we haven't seen anything like this. There's nobody that you can really compare him to. You always like to say, you know, this guy reminds you of that guy reminds you of this guy. We haven't seen a Derrick Henry before in the NFL.
We're talking to Sean Merriman. So I'm curious in general, and I appreciate you coming on. Go listen to the Lights Out podcast as we're breaking down the NFL. When you go back and watch film, so this was a Tuesday game, the Bills-Titans game, and Derrick Henry basically just took Josh Norman, who was and has been a really good NFL player, and gave him that stiff arm and, you know, basically just threw him. I mean, it was an unbelievable play. What happens when you're watching film and that play comes on? What do the guys do in the film study when Josh Norman gets tossed like that? Do people laugh? Do people try to keep straight faces? I mean, like, I'm just kind of curious what that response is like. And does Josh Norman just make a joke and just be like, man, you know, I mean, like, what have you seen when a play like that happens against your defense and then you go back and you have to watch it on film?
You know, nothing is off limits in the locker room.
Yep.
You know, and when you get the team meeting rooms, and if you got the veteran leaders and you have a really good group of guys, they play that over and over and over again. The guys laugh and they point and joke. I mean, the good teams do that. Now, the bad teams, because, you know, the bad teams don't do it because they can't. You know, they're not in a great locker room environment. They don't have great leaders. But the, you know, great teams will be able to go in a team meeting room and turn that film on and watch it over and go over again. It'll be hilarious.
What would you say if you were Josh Norman? Would you try to come up with a joke to try to, like, own it before people can start making jokes at your expense? Or how do you handle – I bet you never got tossed like that on a stiff arm, but I'm sure at some point in time you, like, have a play. And I'm sure – I guarantee you, and I haven't seen a quote from him, but I guarantee you the first thing Josh Norman thought when he was on when he was on the ground after that play was, one, I don't want to check my mentions on social, and two, this is going to look so bad on film. Is that kind of the thought process if you're a player and something like that happens?
No, absolutely. And I'll tell you this, you know, back in 2008 when I got lit up by Maurice Jones-Drew, he caught me and I wasn't looking. He blindsided me, but he laid, you know, put me in my butt.
Yep.
I just knew on the team bus on the way to the facility the next day that everybody was going to give me crap, right? Because I'm the main one. I go back and I rewind the film and I put it up and I make, you know, I get on guys. So when I got mine, I knew mine was coming. So like I said, the great teams, they do these things because it's a brotherhood in there. You understand that, you know, that's how guys are. But I would have looked up at every meme and everything I could get my hands on with Josh Norman. I would have made sure that it was in that team meeting room the next day.
We're talking to Sean Merriman. You know, we're several games in now into the season. And we're not quite to the halfway point, but a lot of guys have got, you know, 5-6 games in pretty much everywhere. What has stood out to you the most about what has been a thoroughly abnormal season, right? There's nothing at all with COVID going on that makes 2020 feel normal. You know, I said I went to the game, you know, there's 10,000 people there. That means there's 60,000 plus empty seats all around us. I went to game Tuesday. I went to the game Sunday. I was glad that I did. But you definitely, it's, you know, you've got masks on, everything else. What has stood out to you the most, maybe, that has surprised you with everybody now having played 5 or 6 games with through NFL Week 6?
Outside of the injuries, that's number one. I think that's obvious. But two, there's a lot of bad defenses right now. I mean,
what do you attribute that to?
Well, you know, I've seen a couple of the Dallas Cowboys players on the defense side of the ball come out a few weeks ago and say it was too complex.
Yep.
Playbook was. And when I looked at that, and the first thing that came to my mind, and I had Wade Phillips on the Lights Out podcast because, you know, Wade, for some odd, crazy reason, he doesn't have a job right now. But, you know, you look at these bad defenses, and there was no offseason. And yep. So you have these huge playbooks, and you're trying to download all this stuff into guys, and they're not out playing fast. You're going to have a lot of missed assignments, a lot of blown coverages. You know, you have to simplify things enough where guys can go out and play football. And knowing that this offseason wasn't normal like it has in the past. We have OTAs, we have certain mini camps, and you can get together as a team. You know, a really good defensive coordinator is going to trim that playbook down until we feel comfortable and fast to go out and play football.
Do you expect that the defenses will catch up some with the offenses in the final 12 weeks of the regular season or thereabouts? Or do you think the advantage, 10 weeks, I guess, of the regular season, or do you think the advantage is so pronounced for offense that they're going to accelerate into the turn?
No, I think it'll catch up. I think it'll catch up. And I know you got we have the rule changes that obviously helps out the offense, in my opinion, and a whole lot more than the defense. But you got to understand, there was no preseason, right? So if you're looking, everything, especially when you're talking about football, it's about preparation and being able to see the preseason games and knowing guys' roster and being able to find out, you know, the good and bad things off a player or formation. You didn't have any of that. So you're kind of starting the season off trying to figure out what these teams are doing. And so it'll catch up. I think it somewhere in the middle of the season, which we're approaching, and towards the end of the season, the defenses should be catching up to the offense.
Last question for you, and I appreciate you, Sean Merriman. You go listen to the Lights Out podcast. Just had Wade Phillips on. I'm sure that is a fascinating listen. Dwayne Haskins, I feel like this whole story with the Washington, now they're the Washington football team, has been so abnormal about the way that Dwayne Haskins lost his job. Used to be you brought along quarterbacks for a long time, but we saw with Josh Rosen, that doesn't happen anymore. And so, in general, what do you think the situation is? Like, what's going on there? It seems incredibly abnormal in general.
Well, so Ron Rivera, he was my defensive coordinator with the Chargers, right? And yeah. I had a great relationship with him, a great coach, great person all the way around. But in my opinion, if someone's not your guy, and I'm not saying that, you know, Dwayne Haskins can't play, but if it doesn't go into a system and you don't think a guy's ready to play and he's your top draft pick, you're going to move really quickly because, you know, coach's jobs now, you're in the hot seat if the team doesn't play well. So you got to make a decision, even though I do believe that it was prematurely. If you look at his numbers and what he's done since he's played, they match up with, you know, some great quarterbacks who started off slow or started off rocky. It happens all the time, and I think that it was too premature for them to make that move.
Appreciate the time, my man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, you got it, man. Thanks again.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
I was teasing it a little bit. In the last segment with Sean Merriman, but we were at the Titans-Texans game. I took my two oldest boys and my nephew, and that's one of the most remarkable comebacks I have ever seen. If you're a Houston Texans fan, the Titans go down the field, score with 4 seconds left, kick the extra point, and then you had that moment where the coin flip happens, and Deshaun Watson had called tails, and it landed on heads. And there's a little bit of a video reaction of him like, we're done now because the Titans are going to get the ball. The defense of the Texans gave up over 600 yards. And how about that play call for the Titans to win in overtime from the 5? You put Derrick Henry in the Wildcat and you theoretically he's going to run it. Now, he's thrown out of that a couple of times. He threw, if some of you may remember, in a pretty memorable situation against the Baltimore Ravens. He hit Corey Davis on a touchdown pass there. But Derrick Henry was just dominant. 94-yard rushing touchdown, over 200 yards rushing. And he scores on that Wildcat formation to win the game in overtime. And effectively end the Houston Texans season at 1-5. Was a wildly entertaining game. Just absolutely exhilarating game. And for people out there who haven't been to a sporting event since this COVID shutdown universe has existed, I've now been to two. I took my kids. We went Tuesday – to the Titans-Bills game here in Nashville. And then Sunday, we went again to the Texans game. I think there were 10,000 fans announced for the Titans game, 8,000 for the Tuesday night game. My kids and my nephew, they're like, this is better than normal because there's no crowd around you. The concession stands, there's no line. If you're a kid, and I had three kids, there's nobody blocking your view. I'm going to go pretty much to every game this year. And I kind of think the limited amount of seats there is kind of awesome. I mean, in all honesty, it's not a bad environment. It's not a bad vibe at all. I'm really pretty much enjoying it. So, huge win for the Titans over the Texans. Now we've got the monster game coming up against the Steelers. The two undefeated teams in the AFC going with the rescheduled game after the Titans had the COVID-related issues. So, that, we've been talking about the NFL all throughout this first hour. The other big takeaway, and we got Joel Klatt coming in the second hour with us, so we'll be talking a lot of college football with him as our guest. But the other big takeaway, in addition to all the NFL stories that we've talked about in this first hour, Alabama and Clemson in college football, I feel like went ahead and basically stamped their ticket for the college football playoff. Alabama took complete control in the second half against Georgia, scored the final 20 minutes of that game, scored the final 20 points of that game, 24, three right before the half when Bama kicked a 52-yard field goal. And you know, new things might be going well with Alabama when they're actually banging through a 52-yard field goal. And then scored the 21 unanswered in the second half and shut out Georgia 21-0. For that to be a 24-point run for Alabama against that vaunted Georgia defense was just, I mean, I think a sign of how good they are, the Crimson Tide. And I feel the same way about Clemson putting 73 on Georgia Tech. I just don't think there's any doubt at all that both of those teams are going to be in the college football playoff. Now, we got the Big Ten returning, so we will follow that to see what exactly Ohio State looks like. And we'll talk about that with Joel Klatt, our college football insider and the lead analyst for Fox College Football, when we get back in the second hour. But man, what an unbelievable performance from both Alabama and Clemson. Pretty outstanding. All right, in the second hour, we're going to dive back into the NFL, talk some more about what was, it feels like, a classic Game 7 won by the LA Dodgers. All that and more we will be chasing with you. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. I am Clay Travis. And boy, I really don't want to have to wake up my 10-year-old and tell him what happened. He fell asleep 3-2. The Braves were leading. Going to be a sore morning for him. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.